Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and I'm joined today by Mr. Terence Corrigan, the wise and venerable Terence.
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm pretty well, thank you. Pretty well indeed. I'm moving to slightly better accommodation tomorrow, so I'm very excited for that. I'm also joined today by the tall and bearded Mr. Gabriel Kraus. Gabriel, how are you?
Very excited. It's an exciting Tuesday. As autumn becomes winter.
It is. And much like yesterday, it is freezing, and it looks like it's going to be freezing for the next couple of days. So we hope that we shall warm your hearts and your minds in this time of great freezing. Now, before I say something completely embarrassing, let's get on to our first story for today. And that is, well, that's us, the IRL and the Daily Friend and all that are launching a campaign called Racism is Not the Problem. So it's a provocative title. Gabriel, you've had the misfortune of being promoted to head of campaigns. So why don't you tell us about what this campaign is about and what it hopes to achieve and what the data behind it is?
Yeah, so I suppose one thing that I've noticed in conversation, both socially and in the professional media, on TV, on radio, dueling it out in print media, is that if one says racism is not the problem in a particular case, the response is more often than not, so you're saying there's no problem at all. So fixated are many of our country's tastemakers on race that if race is not the problem, no problem can be identified whatsoever. That is a bad, dangerous, and actually harmful mistake. We have very serious problems. One of the topics we're going to be talking about is unemployment. But as it happens, we have surveyed demographically representative sample of South Africans once again. We did this in the end of 2020, and we're putting out those results. We ask people first off, with an open question, no list provided, you just tell us what's on your mind. What's the major problem in South Africa? Most people say unemployment. The major answers are unemployment, crime, widespread corruption, housing failures, service delivery failures, education failures, health failures. 3% of people identify racism as one of the major problems. 97% find much greater problems confronting them. We ask people, have you personally experienced racism in the last 5 years? And 80% say no. So 20% say yes, which points to a problem. It's a problem if someone is abusing you on the basis of your race. But the fact that 80% of people say no, I haven't experienced anything like that in the last 5 years, is, well, I just think it's the kind of thing that's totally astonishing if you consider the daily news. I mean, one of the lead stories of the last couple of days has been that a student at Cornwall College in Irene, I should know better because I know people who've been there. She experienced something nasty 7 years ago when she was in grade four. Someone told her that her hair was messy. Now, maybe the teacher told her that her hair was messy because she's black, or maybe the teacher told her hair is messy because teachers protect uniform codes. I was told my hair was messy and that my shirt wasn't tucked in properly and all kinds of things. Almost on a weekly basis at school, I was a grand headache to prefects and teachers alike.
I'll tell you that right now, actually.
I'm still
to the surprise of no one.
I'm still sorry. And I'm still not sort of within reaching distance of a sharp enough object to cut through this surrounding cloud of madness. But that's what it is. Okay, so 7 years ago, this thing happened. And now the whole school is racist. It's systemically racist. You've got parents and students chanting things about how this proves that everything is racist. If you can find one incident of racism, even if you don't prove that it's racism. I mean, I remember going to Schweizer Reinecke where people were accusing Elena Barker, Elsevier Ulefeet of being racist because of the way students were seated in the class. No one really bothered to check, ask the actual parents. When one did that, one found black and white parents alike saying, no, these teachers are amazing. They really love their students. And then no apology came from Panyaza Lesufi, who's, you know, just one of the race merchants around. Anyway, so the point is, most 95% of people say they don't care what color of skin their teacher is, just as long as he or she is good at doing their job. But there is a 5% who really wants their teacher to be the same color as the child, which is an abominable idea to me, that a white person must only be taught by white people and a black person must only be taught by black people. But it is a view of 5%, and that 5% dominates the conversation. What we are trying to do is reclaim the public space. Say that our root cause analysis, coming from the ultimately the best research team in the country, has been that for years, racism has not been the major problem from a policy perspective. Our research furthermore indicates that most South Africans agree. So it's about time that that just becomes a plank upon which debate is built. Not for the purpose of thinking there's no problem at all, but precisely for the purpose of reaching up to our real problems, confronting them face to face, eye to eye, tackling them and bringing them down. So we have a website called racismisnottheproblem.co.za. It'll be live by the time you see this or this evening. So go and check that out. We've got some resources there that are kind of fun. We've got some billboards going up. It's exciting. And I mean, really what we're trying to do is say something that's good news. It's controversial. It's surprising, but it's ultimately good news. And I think that in a country that has so much bad news, it's worth clutching onto the good news that most people are commonsensical, decent non-racialists who really want to work together, who really see through the nonsense. Most people say that we ask our politicians talking up racism to excuse their own failures. Most people say yes. So let's stop that talk. When there's a real case of racism, let's tackle that. It is a problem, but it's not the problem. It's not, it oughtn't to be the distracting factor that it is. We really need to grow up and be pleased with the extent to which we've already done so. So that's the campaign, I suppose. Check out the website, share it around. It's a dare. I dare you to say it out loud that racism is not the problem.
Right. I agree completely that it is a wonderful piece of good news. And if there is indeed, I mean, we talk about so many things that give us pause on this show for the future of South Africa. They make us very concerned. But this I think is a very hopeful thing. And if South Africa is indeed going to rescue itself from the state that it's in currently, the poor economic situation, the poor crime situation, all these things, the fact that most South Africans are decent and want to get along with each other is, I think, one of the most important facts that will lead to possibly to South Africa's success. Mr. Corrigan, sir, your thoughts? Anything to add to what Gabriel was saying?
Look, I think that you know, polling across the board pretty much confirms this. You know, some years ago, I wrote a paper about South African society, and I said that what we have in South Africa is more a case of social distance than animosity. There are large portions of society that for various reasons does not get to interact with people of different backgrounds. There are factors that lead to intercommunal tensions or what are perceived to be tensions. But given our history, if we want to look at other deeply divided societies and where they went, you know, I offer you Yugoslavia, I offer you Rwanda, I offer you Myanmar, Burma, India. More lately, yes, you know, there are problems, and you know, when one of these issues arises, it certainly, I think, quite understandably, brings back a flood of very toxic and bitter historical memories. There's a great deal to be said for tact and for empathy, but ultimately, the heroes and villains of the past are beyond our reach. I'm quoting that from someone. I don't for the life of me remember who said it, but you know, I'm not taking credit. What we can do is to take that, to learn from it, to understand society as it exists, and to envisage it as we would like it to exist. And fundamentally, South Africans, I think, are, and I believe this is borne out by research, are patient, pragmatic people. And that is a national asset, not something to be talked down and dismissed as one might expect, as one might see certain public intellectuals being wont to do.
So I guess, Gabriel, the other question we have to answer whenever this topic comes up is, if indeed this is the case, that the vast majority of South Africans are really not on board with the race merchants, why have they been able to capture the public square so effectively? What is it? What is the secret to their success? And why is it that they've managed to create the perception that they are the majority rather than the small minority that they are?
It's a deep question, and a full answer would require a full hour and more. But the shortcut is to say this: racism was the problem in the 60s and 70s. It's just clear. Another side of that is that generals tend to fight the last war, precisely for the obverse side of the coin to what Terence just mentioned, because the villains of the past are beyond reach. They are also beyond power. You can tackle Hendrik Verwoerd's ghost on a daily basis, and he won't put you in jail. You can't do that anymore. So he's a very easy target to go after. But I think the most important, so this just speaks to the momentum. There's this established idea, and you just keep on going with the established idea that racism is the problem. It's hard to change the conversation. In practice, for ordinary folk, the reason it's hard is because if they speak out, when people are hanging out and they're talking about the weather or sport or their children, the good stuff, it's very easy for everyone to chip in. When the conversation turns to politics, that vocal minority, that noisy minority, has made such a pattern and practice of abusing people who speak out on a non-racial basis. People who say, look, here's the pact. I'm not going to judge you for how you look, and you better not judge me that way either. If we're going to solve anything, it's going to have to be through a conversation on this basis. Someone who says that, implicitly says that in what they actually say, is damned as racist. And that's embarrassing. It is embarrassing to be called a racist. It's embarrassing to be called a Uncle Tom or a House N-word or worse, this kind of abuse gets doled out to black, white, Indian, colored people alike. And so I think South Africans, being very patient and pragmatic, sort of keep to themselves by and large and sit on this quiet bit of knowledge as a personal and individual thing, like something I figured out no one else really knows. And I think that's because we are dominated by a climate of fear. And part of the purpose here is to elucidate to South Africans that they do think the same as their neighbors, that you might not be able to see through the wall, but that our polling can offer you a little window into your neighbor's mind. And you will find that 8 out of 10 times, your neighbor just wants what you do. And I think that that's a key ingredient. I think when people really take it as given that when they say, look, racism is not the problem, I'm more worried about this in public and not just around the dinner table, that they are speaking to people who hear that and agree. And I think the more that happens, the more embarrassing it becomes to make the false accusation of racism. That's really what should be embarrassing. Calling anyone something that they're not, particularly calling them a criminal effectively, which is what it is to be a racist in this country, false accusation should be embarrassing. And for them to get to that stage pragmatically is going to require turning up the volume. And that's what we aim to do.
Very good stuff. And it will continue to roll out over the next couple of weeks. So what's the website again, Gabriel?
racismisnottheproblem.co.za. Yeah, and visit it now, visit it again. We're going to be sort of bringing weekly tasty bites. We're going to be hitting it up on the socials. So if any of you guys like Instagram and the rest, you can find us there. We might be getting involved in some exciting conversations.
Awesome.
But the website's the main thing. Cool.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing more coming out of the next couple of weeks about that, and we will cover those on the show as we always do. So let us now move to if racism is not the problem, well, I guess let's talk about what the problem is. And part of that problem is the destruction of property rights. Now, we talked on Friday about comments that Finance Minister Tito Mboweni had made with regards to expropriation without compensation. But there's some further developments. There's been a lot of reporting in the media now that the EFF and the ANC are fighting not over whether to do expropriation without compensation. Remember that in the terms of a constitutional amendment, the ANC doesn't have enough votes by itself, and that's why it does need the EFF on board with it to support it. They're fighting, as far as I can tell, about how explicit to make the state's power over property in the constitutional amendment. Terence, what's going on? What's the story here? And what should we take away from it?
Okay. We've been warning for the past decade that the end game, that at least one of the end games of this is that the government is would like to hold land along the model of the way it holds water and mineral rights. In other words, what they call state custodianship. Now, there's sort of some hair-splitting differences, but think about this broadly as nationalization. In other words, private property and land would not be possible. Now, this has been the EFF's open and stated intention. With the ANC, it's been somewhat more difficult, somewhat more ambiguous over the years. There certainly have been voices in the ANC that have been vocally demanding it, but not everyone. In fact, just over the last week or so, President Ramaphosa handed out some title deeds at Tafelkop in Limpopo and was waxing lyrical about the wonders of title and these people own their land, which they've been trying to get for 20 years. Well, it turns out that after some deliberation between the ANC and the EFF, the ANC now appears to want to proceed down the custodial or nationalization path. The EFF wanted the constitution to explicitly vest all land in the custodianship of the state. The ANC's proposal is that the constitution must specify that a law must be passed in order to effectively extend state custodianship over land. One's not really sure what the distinction is, apart from adding an extra step. Mm-hmm. We've been saying for some time, watch out for something like this happening. This has been recommended in official documents like the land audit. This has been enunciated by senior officials in government, including at that hive of socialist central planning, the World Economic Forum in Davos, where a senior official of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform said that the constitution will be amended to vest land in the people of South Africa. It's, as I say, it's been coming up in ANC rhetoric. And we've said that watch out for the constitutional amendment, for the expropriation bill that draws this distinction between nationalization, which would require some sort of compensation, and its kissing cousin custodianship, which does the same deprivation but doesn't require compensation, and for a possible land law coming down the line. And I think basically this is now what is unambiguously on the table. The feedback that we've received from the commercial world is that they are quite stunned that it's come to this. They really can't understand it. This will be devastating for business. Can't Oom Cyril see it? This is a warning that we have been issuing. In fact, just a couple of weeks ago, I had a spat with a very prominent member of the research community in the Business Day, who was calling me an but effectively an alarmist. This is one of those times when one takes no pleasure in being in having been shown to be correct. Now, to go back to Charles Dickens, is this the shadow of what will be or only what may be? Well, that depends on how we all approach this. Does one try to barter a better deal, or do we push back? Just understand what's at play here. It's the it's a big part of every homeowner's investment. You know, it's effectively, you will not own the land to your house, although you may be able to own the structure in some way with an appropriate lease, which, you know, is always will face the risk of being cancelled. It's farms, it's factories. It's every land reform beneficiary that has been able to secure that title. And I think that there's something particularly, grotesquely ironic that a community like Tafelkop, which just received its title deeds, might in a year or so be handing them back because, the state is back. There's something wrong with that picture.
No, very much so. If you've ever listened to the ANC speak in Parliament, you'll know that regardless of the topic, they will always take the opportunity to mention the 1913 Land Act. You know, we agree the 1913 Land Act was terrible and a garbage piece of legislation. So why are we repeating its mistakes? Gabriel, what do you make of this? Why is there this sort of public conflict between the ANC and the EFF over this point? Because they seem very broadly aligned.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this stage what you're really seeing is a convergence between the two. The differences in the language are becoming narrower and narrower, less meaningful, and does seem, I think you laid it out in the start, they need each other to get the two-thirds majority to make the amendment. So this is just real politic playing out. I think a lot of people, this point that Terence raises of the IRR warning about this for years in advance, is it's telling, and I think another bit of, so it's to say it's not surprising. There's a pattern and practice here. The other thing that's not surprising, if you just look at recent history, we were promised reform. And most people, I think, who switch onto the mainstream media think reform means something like, well, you've got to change the personnel. You've got to get rid of one or two bad apples. But really, the reform that matters most is policy, because that creates the incentive structure that people respond to. And it can make good people bad and can make bad people act well just to kind of stay in line. A good policy really can do that. The policies that we've seen in the last couple of months alone have been atrocious. I mean, in the lockdown, we had the lunacy of trying to cancel e-commerce, of open-toed shoes being banned, of cigarettes being banned. More recently, we have the post office moving to monopolize, you know, courier services. We've got renewed attempt to save the glory project of SAA. We've got policy to ban the use of guns for self-defense or the ownership of guns for the purpose of self-defense. These are all policies that most South Africans firmly stand against. And I think let me rephrase that most South Africans don't want. Are we firmly standing against them? I don't know that we are. I think, again, there's this thing of the splintering, the kind of isolation where people sit alone at home or just between their friends and they say, this is a very, very terrible idea. But when it comes to public participation, I mean, we've seen hundreds of thousands of signatures funneled through the Institute of Race Relations to stop the bill, to stop the EWC bill. And we've seen already 15,000 or more signatures to stop the gun bill. That being said, there are many millions more who don't want this and are either so distracted by fake problems or by the very real and immediate concerns that they have in terms of sort of putting dinner on the table, that we aren't at this stage mounting the kind of pushback that we need to in order to avert lunacy from becoming policy. So I think that it's a very good time to just listen to people who've been watching this and been reading very closely, like Terence, like Anthea Jeffrey, and who we can learn from, and that we better learn from if we're going to actually stand together.
Terence, final thoughts on this?
Look, I think that if anything positive can come out of this, it's that wave of reform is not coming, at least not in any pro-market, pro-growth sense. In fact, something that I have saved for posterity is a piece in the Daily Maverick, Lights, Camera, Reform, another rave review of the ever imminent moment when our president will reveal his hand. Now that appeared sort of mere hours away from when the ANC decided that it's going to come and confiscate all land. You know, we need to get serious about this. I would just like to bolt something onto what Gabriel said. I think what we're seeing here, in the wake of the COVID disruption, is a highly ideological government going for broke. It wants to push through as much as it can. It wants to maximize its reach. It wants to expand its discretion, and it believes that this is a once in a generation opportunity to do all that. While society is so demoralized and disorganized that they won't be able to push back, and certainly not push back against against everything. One final thought. I saw Professor Ruth Hall, who's an energetic critic of ours, speaking about this proposal, and she made a very interesting point that the government has encountered a great deal of resistance to the idea of custodianship from Black people. And she said this seems to have caught them off guard. I don't know why it would have, because Black people in South Africa have historically lived under the tender mercies of the state with regard to any fixed property they might have had access to. Certainly, stories that have come out just in the last year about the abuses, whether it's mining firms being able to sort of sink shafts on fields that were once plowed, or it's a case of a land reform farmer who spent 12 years getting his farm up and running, only to find that some businessman with connections now gets the lease. It's not a happy story. And there's just also something implausible. A state that finds it difficult to manage a mail system, that has failed to safeguard our water resources, that has seen our mineral treasure trove fall into disuse, is going to manage every square meter of this country. I'm sure there's a dark comedy in there somewhere.
Definitely. And instead of this, they should be giving out title deeds to what is currently state land to the people who live on it and work it. And then we might actually see some real difference made in people's lives rather than just reverting to the bad old days. Anyway, we don't have much time left. I just want to very quickly mention that the unemployment statistics are out for the first quarter of 2021, and they are not great. On the narrow definition of unemployment, unemployment has gone up by 0.1%. On the expanded definition, it's gone up by 0.8%. And the labor absorption rate, which is the percentage of the working age population employed, has gone down by 0.2%. So pretty bad across the board there. Let me go to Gabriel. Gabriel, 30 seconds, your thoughts.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting that these data, the real thing to do is make the year-on-year comparison so that you get a sense of a difference between how things are now and how things were before coronavirus really dominated the world. And at that stage, we were in our second technical recession of Ramaphosa's presidency. We had jobs numbers decreasing. Particularly hard hit was manufacturing and construction. And between then and now, particularly hard hit have been manufacturing and construction. Part of the reason that's important, of course, is because countries that have started to regrow out of the coronavirus situation have seen growth in manufacturing and construction, because they're not leisure, tourism, sort of service industry-based things. They are the kinds of industries where you can work in a relatively socially distanced way. And in countries in the Far East and in South America, where they've sort of done the best job of dodging the bullet, this is where they've had no shrinkage at all. In fact, they've had growth through the plague. So it's really a terrible situation, and reflective, not most importantly, of disinvestment, of the fact that gross fixed capital formation has been down almost every year that Ramaphosa has been president, and that total stock of wealth has actually shrunk in 2018 and 2019. Now we're seeing that shrink even further, 2020, 2021.
Terence, in 20 seconds, your thoughts.
Well, carry on doing what you're doing and we'll have more of it.
Yeah, very well said. All right, that's all the time we have for today. We hope you found this an interesting show. Please like us, go to racismisnottheproblem.co.za, and support us wherever you can. Thank you very much, and we'll see you tomorrow for the Daily French Show. Cheers a lot.